BBC Six Music Podcasts. Six Music. This is a free download from the BBC. Find out more at bbc.co.uk/sixmusic. And now, Adam and Joe.
Hello! It's Adam.
Hello, it's Joe. What was that?
It was a little over the top. Introduction like a circus barker.
Yes.
Hello, roll up. Welcome in.
Sounds like Simon Callow.
Well, Simon Callow may well be a circus barker in my mind. Whoa. You're welcome. Come in. Sit down. Where have you come from?
That's what would happen if you just popped round to Simon Callow's house just to borrow something very trivial.
Yeah.
Just a little cup of milk. He might greet you very over the toply.
Or Brian Blessed.
Well, no, he'd be much louder.
Mm. Cup of milk, you say? Of course, you're quite welcome. Sit down. I'll see if there's any in the fridge. There is! Would you like some?
You'd want to get out as quickly as possible.
Why?
Well, because you just came for the cup of sugar and now he's poured all this crapola on your head.
He's not poured nothing over your
head. He's shouting at you.
That's his way.
And he's clearly lonely.
You're very
ungrateful. And he's overcompensating for his loneliness.
He's got some milk
by getting overexcited about me coming round for milk.
Some milk.
I mean,
out of his fridge.
They're both talented men.
He was busy.
And I'm sure they're full of anecdotes.
You're very ungrateful.
But I just came round for the milk.
Do me a favour.
So stuff a sock in it, blessed.
Don't bother.
Close your theatre. Close your theatre hole, Callow.
Come round any time you like.
I wish I'd never bought this house between Simon Callow and Brian Blessed. Every
Imagine
time I need to borrow a cup of their Susan Surround sound.
Yeah.
Hey, listeners, hello. This is Joe speaking.
Hey, it's Adam here.
Welcome to our podcast. The supposed highlights of our three-hour live show on BBC Six Music between 9 a.m. and noon every Saturday. And, yeah, there's stuff, isn't there, for this one?
You know what? I mean, last week we got a few messages on Twitter. Incidentally, we forgot to say that Sophie Ellis-Bextor, who we were talking about last week, as having made an uncredited Twitter joke.
Theft. She used one of our listeners' made-up jokes on Twitter, and then it got published as if it was her own.
Yeah.
And we accused her of such... But we discovered during our Twitter searching that she came clean. She posted a very nice Twitter that said, am I saying the word Twitter too much?
No, that's right.
It's a very fashionable word. Yeah. Eamon Holmes was talking about it on This Morning this week.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
It's broken through.
They've started doing it. So that's it. Game over for Twitter once they start doing it. Don't you think?
It's very unfair.
It's very unfair. Anyway, Sophie Ellis-Bextor tweeted all about... She confessed to having stolen the joke, and
yeah.
She said she was a fan of the show, which is very good news for the show, because she's lovely.
She's absolutely adorable.
I mean, she's really absolutely lovely.
She's like an alien from a much better planet.
From the planet Butoid.
Butoid?
Yeah, it's the word... That sounds a bit rude. It's the word beautiful.
There's twin planets.
It's the scientific
There's Butoid
root.
And Mutoid.
right
next to each other.
And they have wars. That's a movie.
And we're from the planet Mutoid. And she's the queen of the Butoid.
She
people.
Really is.
Yeah, she's absolutely lovely.
She's lovely. I'm thinking about her face right now.
So am I, yeah. Which part of her face are you thinking about?
All the areas.
I'm thinking about her eyes.
Oh.
Now I'm thinking about her legs. I've drifted down a little bit.
Well, it's all good. Sort of creepy laugh that was from me.
Oh, her legs! I quite understand. She's beautiful. More milk! Shall we have the podcast?
Sure.
Hello again from the big British castle. We hope you're happy with the service that you're paying for. If you're not, please let us know and we will change it all. Because we don't want you to knock the castle down with giant snakes.
Well done, Black Squadron. It's been an extraordinary response to the command this morning, which was Egyptian mummy lavy paper attack or something. And what a response. I mean, for about the first 3 or 4 minutes of that Emmy the Great track, there was nothing. And I thought, oh God, this is a disaster. But then I literally chatted to you for about 30 seconds.
Literally did.
Literally did. Turn back to my computer desktop and there were scores.
How much is a score? Is a score 12?
10.
10?
Yeah, so scores plural is like units of 10.
How many do you think a score is? 20.
Why would a score be 20? What sort of a unit is 20?
We don't know anything.
I know it's 10.
You reckon?
Yeah, it's you're just, I'm surrounded by ignoramuses who are undermining my confidence.
You're the king of the ignoramuses.
What are you talking about?
Your ignorant
I've got a
subject.
B in O-level maths. A B.
A B.
I know what a score is. Now I've lost the flipping text. We can't just accept anything anyone sends us in as fact, just because it's an opinion that isn't ours.
We get lied to so often.
All listeners. Right, look, I tell you what, this whole thing about a score being
right.
10.
Yeah.
If I'm right about that.
Let's figure this out. Okay, point listen, one. Is Paddy McAloon Irish? Point one, right? We need some corroboration, ladies and gentlemen. Point two. What is a score? Is it 10? Is it 20?
Okay, listen, if a score is 10, though.
Yeah.
I am always right about everything, okay? And there can be no more questioning my authority. We're going to make this the linchpin.
Really?
Yeah, this is the example. This is the...
The Rosetta Stone of your kingship of the right kingdom.
Right, you can never question my authority again if a score is 10.
Uh-huh. What a nice bit of cake, no.
Yo, what a cake, what a nice bit of cake.
Nice little bit of cake.
Bit of
tea with a cake, no.
Now, a couple of weeks back, when it wasn't quite so cold, me and my family went to have some family fun at a place called Pleasurewood Hills over in East Anglia. It's, you know, other theme parks.
Sounds like a dirty park.
Are available.
I mean, it doesn't sound like a place to take the kids, to be perfectly honest.
I'd never thought of it like that, but it does sound dirty, doesn't it? Pleasurewood Hills. Anyway, it's not. It's an absolutely delightful...
Three of the sexiest words in the English language.
It's true, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. They are the backbone of the porn industry, those words. So why would you want to take your family...
Especially hills. I mean, that's dirty.
A big, dirty theme park. It's not like that at all. Obviously, it's a family fun day out, and it's a very enjoyable one too. And we were having such a good time there.
What did they have there?
They had...
I mean, I'd hope they had woods and hills.
It was gently rolling hills. There was some attractions that were made of wood, mainly fiberglass.
What kind of things?
Slides.
Bums.
Water chutes, slides, bums, a giant bum.
Fiberglass bums.
A huge woman that you could walk inside. What? Usual stuff.
Come on, focus.
Why, you're the one who's...
Just like the image of you and your family going to Pleasurewood Hills and playing on the fiberglass bums. That would be fun. You could slide down the crack and...
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
They didn't have any of that, right? It's a nice place. It's a nice family place. Although, you know, if we ever got like some spare time and money... We could certainly think about setting up that other theme park. I think it would be nice. but we were queuing up for one ride. It wasn't so much a ride. It was a little bit like one of those.
Oh, God.
What are you thinking of the word ride?
Well, keep talking.
Come on, smutty-minded Cornish man.
Just fun. So you were queuing up for a ride.
But
it wasn't exactly a ride.
No, it wasn't. It was what it was just like a chairlift, basically, is what it was. Mm. You know, do you ever remember the first episode of Father Ted where there's a kind of very low rent theme park and one of the attractions is just a sofa on a winch being moved up and down or something like that. There was a touch of that to this.
Chairlifts are fun though. When I was a kid and before I'd ever been skiing, I used to, and I've only been skiing like twice, didn't really like it, but I used to be mesmerized by chairlifts.
Yeah.
Brilliant idea, really exciting. Were your kids excited to go on the chairlift?
Well, they really were. They were very excited. Mm. So we queued up. But the thing was, I don't know why exactly. Oh, yes, because you could get on the chairlift and then get off the other end, or you could go and then come right the way back. So there was people getting on and off at either end of the chairlift, right? Which sort of stretched across the center of the park. So
good view of the bums.
Yeah, I mean, just breathtaking. And so you had to wait like to get on every other chair. Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
They weren't letting people on every single chair. So it was taking quite a long time because the chairs were moving imperceptibly slowly was the other thing. So queuing up for this thing, even though there are only about six people in the queue, was a very long-winded business. And in front of us was this couple, these two men, and they were chatting away and they were very excited about getting on the chairs. And then there was in front of them this big lady, big matriarch, loud woman. And she was there. And at one point, she turned around to this large group of people that came in and started joining the queue behind us. And she said, "Come on, come up here. You're coming up here." And we were like, "Really? There's about six people that have just joined the queue there, and she's inviting them to jump ahead of us." She's like, "Yeah, come on." And they were sort of dithering, sort of not sure if that was cool to go ahead in front of so many people, which of course it wasn't. But she said, "Yeah, come on, come on. Yes, I'm standing here, so you're coming up here. Come on, you're all coming and standing. Come on, yes, you're coming here. Come on." So they all start pushing ahead of myself and my family and the people behind
us. That's disgusting.
And also this couple of guys in front of us, right? And I was thinking, surely this is not on, because they've just doubled the length of this already very long wait. So the two guys in front just sort of said, "They're not coming and standing there. No way. We're waiting in the queue." And this woman just rounded on them. She said, "What? They are standing here? All right, because I say so. Don't tell me what to do." It got really aggressive,
sounds
really
like
fast.
Some kind of theme park in Royston Vasey.
It was. It turned into one at that point. It was really very aggressive. And I was thinking, oh my goodness, these guys are never... But they wouldn't stand for it. These guys totally held their ground. And they said, you know, they weren't being rude or anything. He just said, "Look, darling, come on, we've all been..." And she goes, "Don't call me darling! How dare you call me darling!" And then she started spitting homophobic abuse at them.
No.
Yeah, and swearing at them. And at one point, it looked like she was going to get violent with them. And I was thinking, oh my gosh. And then her family of kids and stuff started shouting at these guys and like hurling abuse at them as well. It was really harsh.
Broken Britain.
It was really broken Britain. But luckily, it just as at boiling point where I was just thinking, you know, Count Buckley's might have to step in here.
What would Count Buckley's have done?
Probably, you know, just maced them all.
Really?
And I don't know what Count Buckley's would have done. He would have used his very tremulous,
now
frightened
look.
Voice. "Excuse me, can you, now look, stop it." Anyway, Count Buckley's didn't have to step in because the woman said, "All right, we're going to leave. We're going to leave. The smell's getting to me in this queue anyway." It was ridiculous.
Wow.
She was like a kind of cartoon matriarch woman. Do you think you would have stepped in that situation?
I don't know.
With someone that over the top?
I don't know. No, I would be scared because you can't take on a whole family.
No.
God has designed families to... I think in caveman times, whole families would fight regularly. And the children would go for the ankles, you know, and the sensitive parts, headbutting.
The bottoms. She was a very scary matriarch. But when she had gone, I very pathetically leaned forward and patted the guy on the back and said, "Good on you, mate.
Good on you, mate.
Good on you, mate."
Did you go Australian for that?
I did go Australian. I don't know why.
And what did they say?
He said, "Wow, she was taking the mic." So there was a nice little sense of community after.
What an extraordinary outing.
Wow.
What an amazing theme park.
I recommend it, I tell you. Adam's really great and he's wonderful. Joe is really, really, really brilliant. They're fantastic. But which one is the best? It's Adam. Earlier on, we were talking about the fact that Joe was convinced a score...
Was 10. And I really hinged my... I pinned my reputation on that one. I said that, you know, if I get this right, then I'm going to be right about everything.
He wanted it to be...
More.
So convinced was he that he was right. I got a B in O-level maths, he boasted.
Mm-hmm.
That he insisted the result, the answer, be the linchpin stroke Rosetta Stone of his kingship of the Kingdom of Rightness hereafter.
We've had various emails. Joe Tiltman says, "Dear correct Adam and foolish Joe, a score is 20. He says something quite rude there that I can't read about me. Ken Pierce, "I'm afraid Joe is wrong. A score is 20. Abraham Lincoln famously used the phrase in his Gettysburg Address in 1863. Nigel Lupton, "Just thought I'd let you know. A score is 20, as in the saying... 70 years old. I could go on for a while. There's a lot of emails.
So did you just not...
Gavin Graham, while I'm at it, 20 big lols.
What happened in the O-level maths class then? Was that...
Well, it was a B, wasn't it? And it didn't have any questions about score, what a score was.
So you lucked out in a way that you got a B.
Paddy McAloon, on the other hand, is from County Durham.
That's not Ireland.
That's not Ireland.
No.
That's Teesside. So, you know...
Double strikes against Cornballs there, surely.
That's not very good, is it?
I mean, I'm personally delighted about the score because you were so confident and you really did insist on basing the whole level of respect and like whether we had to bow down and worship you and stuff.
I can't argue with that. It's true.
Fiesta! Yay! In your face, Cornballs! It's a 20, not a 10, you idiot hole! Oh, that felt good.
Yeah. Well, I haven't got a leg to stand on, have I? Dear Adam and Joe, a score is 20. Everyone seems to have heard of Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. Who is this Abraham Lincoln? What is this Gettysburg Address?
I've heard of Abraham Lincoln.
Could they all be wrong? Is there still a chance that everyone could be wrong?
Yeah, there's always a chance.
I mean, it could just be a coincidence.
Listen, I'm celebrating, but I'm even stupider than you are. So, you know, I'm just getting my jollies where I can.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration because I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. But now my troubles have disappeared because Retro Text the Nation's here. And now my letter might be read out instead of thrown in the trash and forgotten about.
So last week's Text the Nation, listeners, was all about repurposing celebrity names, kind of mangling them for daily use. And to be honest, it didn't go spectacularly during the live show. We kind of got a few good ones. Susan Surround Sound, I remember being a very good one. I'm going to be using that one.
The rest of them were frankly not Boris Goodenough.
But during the week, it really took off.
Yeah.
The emails came flooding in and we've got loads of good ones now.
Sorry to go on a tiny tangent, but can I just say it was nice to hear Trash back in the jingle there.
Was that the Trash version again?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's divided our listeners as well, hasn't it? Some people love the bin version. Some people like the Trash version.
There are a lot of people...
It's impossible to be... Some people think a score is 20. Some people think it's 10. It's just impossible to please everybody.
Some people think Paddy
when there is no right or wrong.
It's from Ireland, in County Durham in Ireland.
I mean, truth is, you know, it's an abstract concept, isn't it?
It's a flexible friend, isn't
exactly.
It?
Yeah. So here are the best Text the Nations we got during the week. Here's one from Simon in London. Hi, Adam and Joe. Listening to your Text the Nation on repurposing famous names, I thought of a phrase we used to say at uni a lot. When something was particularly contentious, rather than labelling it controversial, we would say that it was Jontroversial. After the start of Grease and Face Off. Take care, Simon in London. That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very good.
How about this one? John from Stockport. Every time my girlfriend puts Savlon on her lips, I always say, putting some Jimmy Savlon.
You even said it like Savile.
Well, exactly. I think I did a good job there.
Jimmy Savilon.
Yeah, I'm recovering.
Here's one from Mo. When I think my four-month-old daughter may have done a poo, I say to her, let's go and check your Alan de Bottom. Makes me chuckle anyway.
That's
Thank
good.
You, Mo.
That's good. Here's one from Claire in Sheffield. Hi. When I'm leaving work, I say, I'm off, which mutated to, I'm off-ski. And has now settled it. I'm Darren Aronofsky.
That's a
I don't
one.
Think anyone at work knows who Darren Aronofsky is, but they just accept it. Claire from Sheffield. More fool them.
Here's one from Mark in Godalming. He says, I know you've probably stopped doing the famous names repurposing thing, but I just remembered a good one that me and my wife do. So it's not too late. When you're getting the kids dressed and you're putting their tops on and you ask them to hold their arm out so you can get the sleeve on with greater ease, you sometimes say, put your arm in, but we say, iddy arm in.
Nice. That's good.
And then he says, do you think the former president of Uganda's name is an appropriate one to use when dressing a five-year-old? I would say no, Mark.
One from Paul in Beckenham. If I wake up in the morning and I'm going to visit the parents, or maybe a semi-important business appointment, I might gaze in the mirror, rub my chin, turn to my lovely wife and ask her, do I need a Hugo Chavez? Many's the night when I've set my alarm thinking, do I need a Hugo Chavez tomorrow? In fact, the word shave has lost all meaning for me now. And when I hear the name of the president of Venezuela on the TV or radio, I think about my chin.
But then you have to go for the soft CH. I would call him Hugo Chavez.
Chavez.
Hugo Chavez.
Well, he's manipulating it there for his own purposes.
Typical of Chavez. Here's one from Lizzie Finn. When I'm feeling, and I do this one as well, I bet you do, and I bet a lot of people do. When I'm feeling bogged down a bit with too many boring or mundane things to do at work, which stop me from doing something more interesting, I'll sometimes say to my boyfriend, I was pretty Peter Bogdanovich today at work.
That's good. Very good.
I've been Peter Bogdanovich.
I was going to make Peter Bogdanovich joke on the blog.
Were you?
I was going to call it the Peter Bogdanovich.
Nice.
But then I wondered whether anyone would understand what I was saying.
Of course.
No one under 30 would, probably.
Here's a final one, and this came in from a couple of people who do the same thing. James in Devon and Stephen McLaughlin, they both say cats later as opposed to catch you later.
That's good. That's quite a classic one, I think.
Yeah.
Here's another EastEnders-related one. Cats later is in EastEnders, right?
I think so.
Oh, my God. This is from Mark Reedman. Dear Adam and Joe, my wife and I used to enjoy playing on the tenuous rhyme between escutcheon, the little protective metal disc that covers a keyhole, and Martin McCutcheon, the actor who played Tiffany in EastEnders. When approaching the door, we would brandish the key and say, excuse me, Martin, as we nudged the escutcheon to one side. The voice we used for this tended to be gruff and masculine, a bit like Tiffany's dad, Terry. Sadly, we can't do this anymore as we've got no escutcheons where we live. Best wishes, Mark Redman.
Wait, I'm reeling from the news that is called an escutcheon, the little disc that
covers
the keyhole.
Am I saying it right? Escutcheon.
Yeah.
I can't trust myself anymore. I'm walking on mental eggshells.
Your faith in yourself has been shaken to its core.
Come on, that's a good one, isn't it?
To its score.
Tell me it's a good one. Please tell me I've done something right.
Jobo, that was absolutely...
I hate this program.
That was brilliant, man.
Yeah, a little groovy break. Now back to work.
Oh, no, it's that dog again. Listeners,
Low rap and music.
Boggins has come back into the studio. Boggins is quite a controversial dog. We had a couple of emails.
Oh, just done a poo.
Boggins,
I'm going to eat it.
Can't understand what you're saying. Natalie in Cardiff says, I love Boggins. He's fab, a great addition to the show. Any chance he'll be making an appearance every show? Whereas John Usher from York says, hi, I heard Boggins again on the podcast and he's still rubbish.
I'm going to lick your face. Is it okay?
In fact, listening to Boggins makes me feel physically sick now. I beg of you, please stop allowing Boggins into the show. Thank you, John Usher from York. I mean, there's two very oppositional views about Boggins.
I found a bird, I killed it and I'm going to eat it. Is that okay? I love you.
Sad that he's incomprehensible these days. But listen, I'm going to agree with John Usher, and I'm actually going to have Boggins put down because he's a nuisance and he's not sanctioned at all by the BBC. He comes in here, I think the receptionists probably like him or let him in or turned a blind eye, but he's recently weed on Terry Wogan.
I love you. I'm going to eat your face.
He used to be popular when I was on
your
in the 70s, but
knees.
Now he's just a relic. So I'm going to put him down. He's frightened. He's gone off.
What have you done to Boggins?
He ran off. I threatened to have him put down.
He ran past me as I was coming back from the toilet.
The audience hates him.
I hate him as well. I hate dogs.
Apart from Natalie in Cardiff, she's the only person who would stand up for Boggins.
What? No, come on. I love dogs. Well, I'm just joking. Dogs are adorable. Why would you want to
hurt... We're not talking about dogs. We're talking specifically about Boggins.
Oh, about Boggins.
Elderly, incomprehensible dog with bottom-based problems.
He's so sweet.
Well, he's gone now, listeners, so let us know if you want Boggins put down.
It smells, though, doesn't it, in here now?
Yeah.
It stinks. He's so sweet.
Let us know if you want us to kill Boggins. Listeners.
Hey. Saying that.
Yeah, it would be humane, wouldn't it?
He He's looking at James. Shot. He's looking at the presenter.
Well,
producer,
there are probably guidelines on executing fictional dogs, aren't there? You know, this is the Big British Castle. You can't just murder an idea like that.
Well, we do that all the time.
Murder an imaginative space. listen, so I would like your advice, Adam.
Yeah.
Do you text? Do you like to text people?
I do it once in a while. The reception I have is not so good, so
I'm a keen texter. I love to text. Do you, when you text someone, do you put a little kiss at the end?
No, I don't go for the kiss. No, I just go for the initial.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, this is a factor in emailing as well, isn't it? How you sign off emails.
Actually, now you mention it, I go for the initial in an email when it's clear who it's from.
You do a kiss?
No kissing. Never.
No. You never kiss.
Or I put love.
You put love.
Yeah.
Love ad.
Yeah. In an email.
You see, when I first started texting many years ago, the person I used to text the most, my text buddy, he used to put a kiss.
Mm-hmm.
See you later. Bye, see you at the cinema. So I got
not
into the
three
habit
kisses,
of
though, was it?
Not three kisses, just one. I'm exaggerating for effect. Yeah.
See you later.
Well, it's a weird thing, isn't it? Because he's not a man I would kiss.
Yeah.
I mean, not really even. I would kiss him on the cheek, but not regularly. And you find yourself in funny situations when you put a kiss after a text. For instance, I was texting a friend, quite a new friend, and you know, the kisses were flying. It was very mundane conversation, like meeting up and where you're going to be and so. But at the end of everything, there was a little kiss. So what do you do, like, for instance, so your opening one can have a kiss because maybe you think the conversation's not going to go that far.
Yeah.
But then we ended up having quite a long conversation and I was still doing the kiss at the end of each.
Well, you started kissing him too.
Yeah.
You are so easily led.
It's just a fun. I mean, it doesn't mean I want to kiss the friend necessarily.
Oh, it does.
Does it?
Yeah.
But that's one of the dangerous areas because he stopped putting kisses at the end of his.
He was getting freaked out.
Messages. I kept sending the kisses.
Did you?
Yeah. Okay, then. That sounds good. Can you imagine if in a real conversation, you just after every sentence, you just leant in and.
And then you might be like one of those Euro people who go for, one of the random people who go for a lip kiss.
A lip kiss.
Oh.
There's someone I'm working with on the thing I'm working on, quite a professional guy. And at the end of every email, whatever it's about, it's big kiss, small kiss, big hug, small hug, kiss.
How do you do a hug?
A circle, I do believe.
Is that a hug?
Well, I think so, unless it's something more racy.
I think it's What if it's mouth, some other kind of mouth pleasure?
A tongue kiss?
Yeah.
I mean, these are quite business-like emails we're getting about, you know, photography tests and stuff. And it'll be, yeah, the tests look really good. See you on Monday. that was a tongue kiss I was doing there. But I'm not going to stop. I'm going to continue kissing because I think, you know, sometimes you have to take a view on whether to do that kind of thing in a message to your parents as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or whether to do it, you know, sometimes the professional and personal boundary can be blurred. If you're working with someone important who you're also friendly with, is it good to give them a couple of kisses?
I just go for the catch-all
love.
Which I think for some people is probably a bit creepy anyway, but.
I'm going to carry on kissing.
You carry on, man. But I hope you take precautions.
Sting.
Extraordinary response to my threat to humanely cull Boggins. I mean, the listenership is really, really divided.
Are they?
Some people are absolutely, what's the phrase? Chomping at the bit.
Chomping or champing?
Both. Champing and chomping at the bit. To see Boggins executed. An anonymous text. Put Boggins in a sack and drop bricks on him.
Oh, that's horrible.
I know. Well, I'm just reading out what people have sent in.
Yeah.
This is a fictional dog. Let Boggins taste the sweet release of death. I hear it's delicious.
Who's that from?
It's anonymous. That's
They're
the
all
thing
anonymous.
About anonymity
you
is
read
so
out
dangerous.
Creepy anonymous texts about killing fictional animals.
We love Boggins. Don't do it. says someone else.
Yeah.
A lot of younger listeners are very distressed.
I mean, he absolutely stinks, Boggins.
By the fictional dog.
But he's so sweet.
He's very sweet. He will drag his bottom across the carpet.
He does. He's got some problem with his glands, I think. So he's trying to itch them and it leaves a terrible smell.
He is trying to itch
them. But he's very sweet.
Save Boggins. Don't send Boggins to doggy heaven early. He's brilliant. Paul in Glasgow.
He's a little kiss there.
Two kisses from Paul.
No hugs.
What I'd like to do is, if listeners give us kisses, can we invite them in to actually give us the kisses? Just on the cheek.
What's happened with your plan to sleep with the listeners?
I don't know. There's been very little. There was a response from the listeners, wasn't there, that the production team haven't exactly swung into action.
Things move very slowly at the castle.
They do, don't they? It'll have to be approved, but it will happen.
I mean, to say you have to jump through hoops is a understatement of massive proportions. So, folks, I don't know if you know, but we've got a podcast available of this programme. And it's not just like a little condensed package of highlights, although essentially that's what it is. They just remove the music and the stuff that we can't clear, and you're left with all the talking bits. But you're also left with some wonderful jingles and a little intro and an outro that's special dedicated intro and outro for the podcast. But some people still don't know that this thing exists, and we care about the podcast very much, and it's available to download free on iTunes and other places like that every Monday evening. It usually comes out. But we want to make as many people aware of the existence of the podcast as possible. So James, our producer, was suggesting we do some kind of trail, right, that we could play during the live show. So running out of time this week, I came up with this. I'll play the opening part of the trail. So this, I was thinking that this would go at the beginning of a little package of highlights from the podcast. So this would be the intro part of the trail.
Hi, my name's Adam Buxton, and I want to talk to you about podcasts. Thousands of people in the UK get the Adam and Joe podcasts every Monday night. They're not serious, but if they're not dealt with immediately, they can build up and become irritating. The podcast is caused by the highlights of Adam and Joe's Six Music show on a Saturday morning, with all the actual music bits surgically removed. However, there are some extra bits which can be highly infectious.
See, you get the joke.
Well, it makes it sound sort of like quite clinical and dangerous.
It's like a public health warning.
Yeah.
But then I chose the wrong sort of music, really, to go underneath.
Well, it's like you're repelling people from the podcast.
And it's like I'm repelling them. That's the other problem with it. I was playing it to you because I wanted to see if you'd spot the problem with it. It's repellent.
It's good, though. It's very good.
Do you want to hear the outro?
Yeah.
Here's the outro that would come after the clip packages if this was ever used, which it will not.
I can't wait. And it seems like as if I don't have to, which is wonderful.
Here it is.
The good news is that Adam and Joe podcasts are not serious and can be got rid of very easily. If you'd like to catch Adam and Joe podcasts, your best bet is to hang around the internet on a Monday night. Or you can sleep with someone who already has Adam and Joe podcasts. They're generally easy to spot because they're very attractive.
I like the music bed. That's a sort of
it's like a fun government announcement.
It is, isn't it? I mean, it's depressing but yet upbeat at the same time, kind of thing. Like life.
Quick,
like illnesses.
Before my free play, thumbs up or thumbs down for the podcast trail?
Thumbs up, man.
Oh, thanks, man.
Definitely.
It's unexpected.
Text the nation. Text the nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
But listen, before we go any further, the email, if you want to respond to our Text the Nation topic this week, is adamandjoe.sixmusic@bbc.co.uk. And this week, we're talking about family holidays, or family breaks specifically, right? Not like the big family summer holidays, but half-term breaks.
You're talking half-term.
Talking half-term, right? Did you ever go on half-term breaks with your family?
Yeah, boy!
Sounds like a no.
Why did I respond like that?
Don't know, because you're in...
Of course I did.
Did you? What kind of thing would you do?
We would go to Devon.
Did you?
Yeah.
Devon. Mm. Devon knows how they make it so creamy.
You came every now and then.
Yes.
You didn't like it very much.
Dulverton.
You got bored, yeah.
No, I never got bored.
Dulverton's in all the papers now.
Why?
Because some ridiculous journalist has moved there and they're trying to make a big deal out of it.
Because it's unfriendly.
Well, that's what they're saying, which is nonsense.
Nonsense.
It's the most beautiful, friendly village in the country, and a great deal of members of my family live there.
Yeah, we had a nice time there, I remember.
They're the ones trying to chase out the journalist.
We found an abandoned car and jumped on top of it.
Smashed it in. And then we realised it wasn't abandoned. So that's what we used to do, little trips to Devon.
The good times.
What have you got planned for your family at half term?
Well, we are going to Centre Parks, the holiday the weather can't spoil. Other holidays that weather can't spoil are available. But we're going there, and it's a place I've never been to that kind of holiday resort before. The kind of
a space aged one.
It's sort of space aged. It's under a biodome, but more specifically, I'm thinking of places like that, a little bit like Butlins and
a holiday resort camp.
I
mean, that's what it is. They wouldn't want to call it that, would they? Because that sounds so retrograde.
Yeah. But essentially, I suppose, yes, it's a kind of high-end holiday camp, isn't
it? Medium end.
So, well, you know, I haven't been there. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't be able to comment, possibly. But
what end it is?
I don't know what to expect. I'm a tiny little bit nervous about it.
Yes.
Right? Because also the other thing is that you're thrust together with a lot of families at those places. I mean, you get your little log cabin in the woods something like that, I'm hoping. And then you plan your activities and stuff like that. But my family hasn't really been on its own. Like, we've been on family holidays, but generally we're joined by other people and stuff like that.
It's sure to be perfect.
It's
I can see you on your bikes.
Yeah.
Cycling across wood chippings.
In the rain.
I can see you whizzling down a water slide.
Uh-huh.
Frank going, woo! You catching him at the bottom and going, ha, 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 ha. Tossing your head back, ha, 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 ha. I can see maybe
reading
your
that.
Younger son,
yeah.
Natty cooking maybe with your wife.
Why are they laughing?
Because they're having such a great time.
I see.
I think it's going to be brilliant.
Yeah. And then me and my wife in the evening, uncork a bottle of wine, have a little barbecue. And,
Egyptian mummy attack.
Yeah. Then go off to the fiberglass bum.
The fiberglass bum bar. It's going to be lovely.
You know, the thing I'm slightly worried about is the whole water slide thing, because I know that's going to be a big part of the attraction. But I feel a bit self-conscious going in and stripping off in a big communal area.
You used to put a proper T-shirt on, didn't you?
Yeah.
When you were little. You don't like baring your upper torso.
No, I'm not. I'm not that proud of my upper torso. So, you know, on holiday, like on a summer holiday, you have the excuse that you're protecting yourself from the sun's evil rays. Mm. But you can't do that under the biodome.
That's true. What are you going to do? Well, you could wear one of those wetsuits.
Yeah, you don't think that would mark me out as being slightly eccentric?
No. I think it's acceptable these days because, let's face it, nipples are obscene.
They are disgusting.
And in this contemporary conservative climate.
Yeah, especially hairy nipples.
Men's nipples. It's time to conceal them properly.
That's what I'm saying.
Hairy nipples. Yeah, it's too much for children, for young children.
So anyway, there's any number of things that could go right, as you've pointed out. But there's a lot of things that could go wrong.
You know what? I forgot this was a Text the Nation subject.
Well, exactly.
I thought we were just chatting.
Just chatting. So specifically, listeners, I'm curious about these kind of breaks that you've had that maybe have gone disastrously wrong. I'd like to know details.
Ouch! Podcast! Crazy sexy fun! Coming out of my computer down my headphones. Two my ears. Two guys from England just talking about things. Oh my gosh, what's the point of all this stuff? I don't know.
So last week, listeners, I'm going to do a little edit point here for the podcast.
Yeah.
Last week, listeners, we had a chill cake sent in to us. Is that going to work?
That's a good idea. Like just rehearsing it on the live show.
Yeah.
So that we can edit it for the podcast.
Thanks. We were sent a chill cake by a listener, an actual chill cake. The listener's name is Tom Williamson, who lives in Liverpool. And some of our listeners were quite angry about our response to the chill cake. I mean, the chill cake, I think, had gone slightly off. It was made with fresh cream and posted from Liverpool. I think the cream may have been on the turn. And we did eat it. And that in and of itself is above and beyond the call of duty, because you're not really supposed to eat things that are sent in by listeners if you're a broadcaster. Is there any case history there? Have any presenters fallen foul of poisoned missives?
I think Eamon Holmes was in a coma for 8 years after eating a poisoned
caramel cake. a chill cake. I thought it was a spiked caramel. But anyway, yeah, so with stories like that going around, you can't be too careful.
How would you spike a caramel?
I don't know. I don't know. We'll figure out a way.
Yeah.
But so anyway, poor old Tom, we were quite sceptical about his chill cake, but we did eat it.
We did eat it.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of Twitter twitting.
Was there? Like about, saying that about, we were ungrateful.
I'm angry with Adam and Joe because they were so ungrateful to Tom.
We made it clear during the show that we were very grateful to Tom, and we thought it was a lovely gesture to have made a chill cake and sent it
There's
in.
There's no pleasing some people.
But if it tasted with their demand, then what were we supposed to do?
But Tom has sent us a nice little letter here. It's written in a baro on a ripped-out piece of pad, which is quite nice, isn't it?
Very nice.
Dear Adam and Joe, I must apologise for sending you a dodgy chill cake. Something must have happened to it between Liverpool and London. I feel a bit bad for getting your hopes up after describing it as the cake equivalent of a Viscount biscuit. To try and make it up to you, here is something a lot safer. And he sent us a packet of biscuits.
A packet of Viscounts. Check it out. Oh, let's have one of them.
What's the sell-by date?
It's the chill biscuit. Come on.
Oh, no, they're all right. They're good till next year.
Good till.
Thank you, Tom. That's very kind of you.
Yeah, that's very nice of you.
And Williamson, not Wilkinson. I think we called him Wilkinson.
Possibly. It was a cavalcade of inaccuracy and disrespect.
As per usual.
As per usual. So, Tom, sincere thank yous, not just for these chill biscuits, but for the chill cake. It was really nice of you, and we did very much appreciate it. And we were just being jerks last week when we started laughing about it. But it was quite funny because it tasted strange. It tasted very odd. And it suddenly occurred to us as we were eating it that it was a stupid thing to be doing live on air, like eating a cake that you don't really know anything about.
But how lovely to get a handwritten note there.
Really nice. And
so much character in his writing.
I'm going to eat this for you, Tom. Cheers.
You just don't get that digitally. Look at that handwriting. It's expressing so much.
Now that is a delicious chill biscuit.
Great times, great friends, great highlights. The Adam and Joe's Six Music Podcast. It's what extreme boredom was made for. Excuse me.
Now listen, folks, it's time that we announce the winners of our Electric Proms Song Wars competition, for which we don't have a jingle. It feels like...
I did some electric noises.
Electric Proms.
The Song Wars competition.
All right. That's how we would do it if there was a jingle. And just to remind you, if you don't know what we're talking about, we asked people about 3 or 4 weeks ago to go onto the blog to check out the instrumental versions of some of our old Song Wars tunes. It was Joe's Quantum of Solace song and My Nutty Room song. And we asked them to send in videos of themselves just singing along to those songs or doing an interpretation of those songs. And we had some great entries that came in, and we have made our decisions right now. So do you want to say anything about your runners-up, Joe, or are you just going to go straight into your winner?
Well, I've written a little thing for that'll go up on the blog that has some runners-up. I'd say the runners-up that really stood out for me were the wonderful Emmett family, who also entered our Video Wars competition. Do you remember their Video Wars entry? I mean, it was really spectacular. And they are role models for Broken Britain, because they're a very unified family where mother and father and son and daughter work together to achieve something greater than the sum of their parts. And their video is extraordinary. It's a sort of beautifully choreographed, flip chart based, you know, it's got lab coats and there's a whole intro spiel and the whole family dances. I love to see families dance. When's the last time your whole family just danced?
You know, I can't remember.
I mean, you'll be doing it at Centre Parks, probably.
Sure we will.
Yeah, on the final big night barbecue.
No, I wish we did. But wish we danced.
It's a beautiful sight. So the Emmett family I'd pick out, and also the other people I would pick out would be Al Ronald, I think his name was, and Cy Henty, who did an extraordinary video as well. But we'll put links to the runners-up on the blog, maybe. But my winner is a gentleman called Ben Mercer, and Ben's done a brilliant kind of acoustic guitar version of the song. We'll play you a little clip here. This is Ben, a tiny clip of Ben Mercer's winning entry.
The choir is honest. What a go on that. He's having flashbacks in black and white. No more red eyebrows and no more quips. He's got the something from the bottom. I'm not a broad exposure ship.
You
You see, he manages to make it sound really good.
He sounds like Jamie T there.
Yeah, yeah, he's good. And you should take a look at him with your eyes because he's a contemporary customer.
Absolutely.
And he's opening a new shop and it's going to be very popular.
He's got skinny trousers.
He really does. And his name's Ben Mercer. And I'm very honoured and privileged that he's going to be representing me and Cornball's International Torpedo Systems PLC at the Song Wars battle. Because let's not forget, this is a battle.
It is a battle. What are you going to do then? Are you going to collaborate with him on a rendition?
No, I'm going to just let him do his thing.
Let him do his thing.
I'm not going to go and, urinate on his fries. Am I? He's got a lovely portion of fries. I'm not going to slam my fist in there.
No. Why would you?
Why would I do that?
Fist in his chips. My runners-up, let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, and I got some really nice entries, and I did my best to go and leave a little comment on all the YouTube clips that I was made aware of. Rob Watts and Steve Gardner, they actually came round last weekend.
To your house?
No, to film us outside the
building. Oh, yeah. They were waiting outside the BBC building.
They wanted to do a little bit of stalking with us. And it was very funny. You can see the results on YouTube. So thanks for that, chaps. Rushka Moore, she did a really nice... She had a lovely voice as well. And she was singing away and drawing a moustache on her
face. What happened to it?
Well, she's a runner-up.
Okay.
She also had a lovely picture of Bowie in the background there and changed the Nutty Room lyrics to reflect our affection for Bowie. Ben Adams, he was dressed up in a Superman costume on the toilet.
Yes.
I've got that same Superman costume, Ben, and I was very impressed. I mean, it was a very...
And you've got a toilet.
I've got a toilet.
We should be friends.
We should be buddies, and he's got a little beard as well, which I currently don't have. But when I grow my new one, let's hang out, Ben. I'm not serious.
What sort of thing is that to say?
Just covering myself.
You idiot hole.
I am serious, Ben. You look really great. We should hang out, but there's just no time. But the winners...
Sorry, that's Noggins the horse. Just come through. Come on, Noggins. Someone get that horse an apple.
We should... Listen, Ben, come on. Let's get together. Dids and Trish, however, are my winners. They sent in a really nice close harmony version of Nutty Room. Let's hear a little clip.
Nutty, I am a nutty man, I'm sitting in my nutty room. I'm cutting some bits of human skin to make into a big cocoon. It's a fool for the cops and I'm pulling out.
Very nice indeed. They work in a local pub in Cornwall. And Dids is also an artist extraordinaire. Trish designs stuff and sells her own range of luxury umbrellas. They say they're both fairly crafty and eat a lot of cake. I'm very much looking forward to meeting you, Dids and Trish, and congratulations for being my winners. And there's going to be a lot of kissing, though, right?
There will be a lot of kissing. I think both those winners are going to do a terrific job, and we're both hugely grateful to everyone who entered, because let's face it, this competition was saved from the jaws of ignominy by our listeners' response. You know, for the first week, we had no entries, and every single person who entered, we're hugely grateful to for saving our reputation. We would have been the laughing stock of the castle. Vernon Kay would have been pelting us with rotten fruit. Mm. Brucey would have been making scandalous comments about us. But you've saved our reputation, listeners, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. We really enjoy watching every single one of those.
I'm a funny person. I often make up jokes. My jokes are more amusing than those of other folks. When you hear my joke, I think you'll find that you agree. Come on, you're all invited to a made-up joke party.
We are getting more and more of these things sent up. Just to remind you, if you're not familiar with this section, it's not lame jokes, it's made-up jokes, right? They have to be authored by yourself. So if it's just a case of some very simple wordplay and a little pun, which probably has been made many times before, I wouldn't bother sending that in. Send us your really tortured, insane ones, okay? That's the ones that we're particularly interested in. But then if you do have one that's just an absolute peach and you're convinced that you made it up, we'd like to hear that one too. For example, I'll get you started with a slightly gnomic one from Richard Harrison. He says, imagine my disappointment when I went to Selfridges and found out they didn't sell fridges. Yeah?
Yeah, I would say that's not made up.
You reckon?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident. I mean, it's good, but I think it's got a heritage. Yeah. I think it's used.
I mean, it's fairly...
It's secondhand.
It's a little obvious,
I suppose. It's good. It definitely works.
I like it.
What about this one? Not sure about this one. This is from Josh Sparrow. Hi, Adam and Joe. I've made up a joke that I've been testing out with various people. It's received a range of responses so far. Here we go. Did I tell you about the new keyboard that I bought from the music shop recently? I think it may be broken. It only seems to play Wagner. I think it must be a Nazi synthesizer. That's quite good, isn't it? From Josh Sparrow.
That is good. Here's one from Sarah, or Sarah. She says, I didn't make this up, but my best friend did, and I feel she deserves due recognition for her efforts. Where does the nutty professor work?
Oh, I don't know, Tommy.
In macadamia.
Yeah, yeah, good. That's good.
She says, it made me laugh. Her name is Nancy Ockenden, and she and her husband Rick are avid fans. They'll be dead chuffed.
That's good. Nut jokes are good. We get quite a few cheese jokes macadamia. As well. Mascarpone jokes, don't we?
Yes, we've had a load of complicated jokes about masking a pony.
Cheese, I mean cheese, yeah.
Yeah.
After dinner snacks. How about this one from Amy and Earl in Sydney? This is our made-up joke. How do you get a samurai, his wife, a bandit, a psychic, a woodcutter, a priest, a commoner, and a baby on stage as quickly as possible? Rashomon. 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 It's a Kurosawa film.
With all those people in it.
Yeah, it's very famous.
That is a chucklesome little joke.
Come on, that's fun for film nerds.
I'm pretty sure I've heard Jimmy Carr telling that one.
Yeah.
That's a very old joke.
Rashomon. Hello again, Adam and Joe. Oh, this is someone who sent in several jokes. Okay, so you didn't like my first original joke. Here's my second attempt. It's on a similar theme. This is from Stuart in York. Oliver Cromwell and King Charles I are driving down the street in a car. Yes, a car. And they're pulled over by the police. They both step out of the car as the policeman walks up to them. Is there a problem, officer? Asks Oliver Cromwell. Well, not with you, sir, but it's your friend over there, the policeman says, pointing to King James I. I don't like his cavalier attitude.
That was a punchline.
Yeah.
That's very...
It's cavalier. It's a play on cavalier.
Cavalier. Yeah.
But it's nice because it's laboured, isn't it? The build-up's laboured.
Certainly it's laboured. That's a very nicely laboured setup.
Quickly do one.
Here's a pithy one from Ben in Glasgow, who's aged 14, he tells us. And that's impressive, I think.
To be aged 14.
Yeah. Imagine getting away with that in this day and age. A cowboy walks into a German garage. What does he say?
I don't know.
Audi.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
That's good, Ben in Glasgow, aged 14. I mean, if you're coming out with those at 14...
That's amazing. Imagine what he's going to be coming out with at 16.
You're going to have your own pretty middle-of-the-road TV show by the time you're 20.
Dear Adam and Joe, I thought up the following joke today. What do sharks do to earn pocket money? Jaws. I hope you like it. Jonathan Cobb.
Jaws.
Good,
you know
it?
What? I didn't get it when I read it in the email.
Really?
Yeah.
Jaws. That's quite good.
That's very good.
Hello, Adam and Joe. This is my joke that I made up, and you can tell I made it up because my name is Lee, and the joke involves my name, Lee. Here goes. What did Oil of Ule used to be called? I love you, Lee. Why did I read that out?
Why did you read that out? That's not a joke.
Because it's in green.
He
said it in green.
Just words with his name in.
He said it in green and it attracted my eye. Clever.
Text the nation. What if I don't want to? Can I use an email? Is that a problem?
No, it's not a problem.
Like, we assumed that was someone doing a sort of Borat job on the Text the Nation jingle, but we are assured, although it might just be another tissue of lies.
It might just be.
That it's a real Russian man. Anyway, let's not dwell on that. Let's get into this week's Text the Nation.
What's the subject this week, Adam?
Pinning me down, eh?
Yeah.
Well, we were thinking about kind of family excursions that you've had, not necessarily summer holidays, but half-term breaks and things like that have maybe been less than enjoyable.
Yeah.
Is that good enough? Does that fit in with what you've got?
Yeah, it does. It's kind of nightmare holiday stories with a sort of peculiar proviso that they have to be half-term. That doesn't really probably impact on the stories themselves.
No.
Are there any, like, are we looking at something that's uniquely half-term based?
Don't ask me more questions. Just read out what you've got.
Okay, this is from Gary in his shed. Dear Adam and Joe, I once went to Centre Parks at the tender age of 16. On arrival, I ran to pool excited at the prospect of the flume. Halfway down, my big toe caught a rough joint on the slide and my nail was ripped off. Ooh.
I mean, that's...
Ouchie poo-poo.
That's terrible. Can that really happen?
I mean, I'm sure their slides are much more...
Smooth
now. That's
honed.
Probably a thing of the past. And, yeah. Here's another one. Daniel in Reading. We went to Yarmouth with my mum and aunt many moons ago, and the weather was terrible, so we spent most of the time in the caravan. Mum and aunt began getting right on each other's nerves, culminating in a physical fight. My aunt hitting my mother with a broom.
Whoa.
And my mother hitting her on the head with a china bowl full of pasta.
No way. Are they in the caravan?
Yeah.
That, of course.
That's like Kill Bill 2.
A caravan has got to be a pressure cooker environment, though,
yes.
For a family holiday. It must have. Surely something kicks off in a
more
caravan.
More of a pressure cooker than a biodome?
Well, no, because the biodome is larger and there's more places to hide.
I think
stuff.
Those places trap psychic energy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be a fight on your holiday.
Well, you'll find out in a couple of weeks, I guess.
What if that woman's there?
Which woman?
From the bum park.
She may well be. It's the same general area. Yeah, that would be terrifying. Here, come on, you're coming up here. You can stand in the queue over here.
Here's one from Gary in Llanelli. Dear lads, my family went on a mystery tour which ended up in Ilfracombe. Me and my girlfriend had food poisoning. My mother stepped on our dog's ear before the journey. My brother ate a box of eclairs on the bus and was sick. And my mother was attacked by a lunatic. And we saw a youngish man who sported a Hitler moustache.
He was the guy from Wild Beasts.
What an amazing list of incidents.
You know, the worst one I would think would be the eclair vomit.
Why? Because the toffee bits might not have been fully
The cream,
digested.
Once that comes back up again, is just...
Oh, it depends whether they're chocolate eclairs or
oh, you're
eclair
thinking
buns.
They might have been the sweets.
Yeah, 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 like the toffees with chocolate inside.
I got the impression it was eclairs.
Maybe, yeah, creamy.
Creamy eclairs.
Creamy puke. Not so very nice. Jason from Leeds. How do you think this is going?
Very well.
Very well.
This is a good,
good
one.
Good.
Yes.
Jason from Leeds. Half-term holiday in Turkey went so wrong. My dad would wear a pair of too tight black satin speedos with it all on show and a pair of clogs. Everybody would stare at him, but he just carried on. We got talking to some other kids 3 days into the holiday, and one kid said, "Have you seen that man with the tight trunks with large package wearing clogs?" We said, "No, whoever can that be?"
Oh, that was Dad. He sounds like a mega dude.
There's a very strong image there,
yeah.
Isn't there? I mean, I can really picture that guy.
Maybe I should wear... Do you reckon I should wear that kind of thing
yes.
under the biodome?
Yes, I
think... Take a picture
think
of myself like
if
that?
If you're self-conscious about your hairy chest,
yeah.
You should go completely the other way and really ram it up people's faces.
And the way to do that is...
Can you ram something up a face?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I think you should do. I think the trunks should be really tiny and there should definitely be clogs. Very big wooden tourist clogs from Amsterdam. Yes.
Wow.
And nothing else.
Nothing else.
Come on, kids.
I don't know, but I don't know if I want to humiliate
Let's
my
get out
children.
Of here. I hate the stink. That's the kind of thing
Who's
you'd
saying
say.
That?
You
oh,
are.
That's me saying
You are,
that.
Yeah. You're sort of using what you got from that woman and
right.
you're using it as
I don't want to poison
your
the atmosphere
arsenal.
In the biodome.
It's just an idea.
All right, then.
And that's the end of this week's podcast. Now have a lovely week.
Thank you. We are the Toilet Men. Good night. You've been wonderful. Thank you so much. Oh, thank you.
So there we are, listeners. Thanks very much for downloading this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it. We hope it hasn't got you into any embarrassing pickles on public transport. People often email us saying they've got into difficult social problems because... believe it or not, the podcast has somehow accidentally made them laugh.
I think sometimes when you and I get a giggle fit,
it's a bit infectious. And then people email in saying that they've started giggling in tightly packed train carriages and had to cover their behaviour. You know, that's tricky, isn't it? And I feel culpable.
Yeah. In a good way, though.
That's good, isn't it?
I mean,
it?
That's a fun crime to be responsible for.
It is a fun crime, but we do get a lot of people emailing in and they're worried about it. They want to know techniques for disguising that kind of thing, for trying to repress your laughter.
Well, you're quite a massive corpser anyway.
I love to corpse, but it's a big thing. I mean, I remember you and me at school. It can be when you get a giggle on, in a class
with
a nasty teacher and something in the air, it's like there's laughing gas in the air. And the more angry they get with you, the funnier it becomes.
Yeah.
And you can get hysterical. So techniques to conceal laughter, they're an important thing.
I mean, we're lucky because on this show it doesn't really matter if we laugh. But there are some situations where it's totally not appropriate.
Yeah.
And of course, in those situations, when you're laughing in church, it becomes even more painful and difficult to actually stop.
So what are the basics? There's the snort, the sneeze.
What do you do with the sneeze?
Well, you just turn it into some kind of... You know,
sneeze,
or as if it's some kind of sinus problem.
Yeah. You know what I do is physical pain.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm doing an actual acting job where I really am not supposed to laugh, which does happen sometimes.
You put your hand in your pocket and pinch your thigh.
I pinch my leg really very, very
really?
Extremely, yeah. Or I bite my lip so hard that sometimes it draws blood. And
really?
Stuff. Yeah, you've got to really hurt yourself.
To stop. What about thinking about something really miserable?
That sort of works.
Do you know the same technique you might use to stop yourself getting aroused? variation of that?
Yeah, yeah.
Just think about something really stone cold, not funny.
Sometimes a good thing is just to think about how someone would be viewing the situation if they really didn't like you very much.
Yes. Or what about this? I can't believe she's dead! So that's swapping it round, you see.
Yeah, but
into tears.
You've still...
And then you've got the whole carriage's sympathy. Oh, God, she's dead.
Oh, I see we're in the carriage still. Yeah. She's dead.
It's just an idea. I'm just trying to give the listeners
You've got
some
their
solutions.
Sympathy, but you've still caused a little scene.
Well, it's a better scene, though, isn't it?
Is it?
At least they don't think you're mentiles.
So are you excited about the David Letterman chat on next week's
show? I can't wait for this show to get really analytical.
We can use the new jingle, the talking point jingle.
Yeah, the thing is, it's a serious issue. It's quite a serious thing, though. I don't see where the laugh miners are going to get their giggles from.
Well, you have to wait and find out, won't you? Because one way or another, I am going to make sure we talk about it.
I cannot wait. The more this show gets like the right stuff with Matthew Wright, the happier I'll be.
Well, tune in next week and find out, listeners. Take care. Have a wonderful week. I love you. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
If you enjoyed the Adam and Joe podcast, then why not try the John Richardson podcast? Download it now. bbc.co.uk/6music.
Have you drawn up your albums of the year list yet?
No.
The Year We Make Contact.
It's amazing, isn't it? Imagine. Helen Mirren. Who else is up there in that spaceship?
Some bad
John
Russians.
Lithgow. John Lithgow's a Russian, isn't he?
Yes.
I prefer 2010 to 2001.
It's a better film.
It's got a more upbeat ending.
That's right.
They explain the monolith.
It makes a little bit of sense.
You know, just say what they are, Stanley
Kubrick. Try making
a
little bit of sense, Mr. Kubrick.
Don't be all abstract with your giant
features. Don't need your 20 minutes of paint falling over the camera at the end.
Just get Roy Schneider to tell us what's in them with words.
A little rompo with Kate Mirren. Leslie Mirren, what's her name? Helen.
Adam and Joe on 6 Music.